everyone. This is JJ, the co-founder of Good Pods. If you haven't heard of it yet, Good Pods is like Goodreads or Instagram, but for podcasts. It's new, it's social, it's different, and it's growing really fast. There are more than 2 million podcasts, and we know that it is impossible to figure out what to listen to. On Good Pods, you follow your friends and podcasters to see what they like. That is the number one way to discover new shows and episodes. You can find Good Pods on the web or download the app. Happy listening.
And welcome back to another episode of Fantasy Football with Gumbo. My name is Ja, and today we're going to go ahead and talk about some sleepers, talk about some guys who you might want to pick up off of free agency, out of the waiver wire, if you need someone to step in and provide a spot start for your lineup. I'm also going to talk about some guys who I think are droppable, dudes that you could probably just go ahead and release off your team. They're clogging up roster space, and there's probably going to be a few big names on that list today. But I want to start off with my favorite sleeper of the week, someone who's a plug and play at running back, and that's actually going to be Tyrone Tracy, running back for the New York Giants this week against the Cincinnati Bengals. All right, so as usual, what I want to do is I want to dive into the Cincinnati Bengals defense, and I want to break down the areas where they are maybe susceptible. They suck at stopping the run. That's the first thing that comes to mind. The Cincinnati Bengals rank 31st out of 32 teams in run-stop-win rate. You're probably asking yourself, what is run-stop-win rate? Run-stop-win rate is a metric that was created by a bunch of nerds at ESPN, but it essentially records how often a run defender beats his blocker in the running game. So it records how often the defensive tackle gets past maybe like an offensive guard, a center, and he gets past the blocker and makes a tackle in the backfield or makes a tackle on the running back. The Bengals are terrible at doing that. They are one of the worst run defenses in the NFL. They have a significant struggle there. And I believe they have the second to last defensive success rate. And they allow the most points per drive. I think they're 31st in the most points allowed per drive. They give up a lot of points. They suck on third downs, which... hey, that's going to be a benefit for the Giants. The Giants are going to be without Malik Nabers this week. It does not sound like he's going to make it out of concussion protocol. So this could be a game in which they lean on the run. Look, Tyrone Tracy had a really big game last week against Seattle. Tyrone Tracy last week had 18 carries, and he ran for 129 yards against the Seahawks defense. That's really good. When you look at the line for the Giants and the Bengals game, the Bengals are favored by about 3.5 points. That 3.5 marker in betting is important to me because anytime Vegas goes over 2.5, 3 points, they feel pretty confidently in, you know, the favored team winning. So from what Vegas is telling us, they expect Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and the Cincinnati Bengals to beat the Giants. Now, the Giants did have a surprise win last week against the Seahawks. Why does any of that matter? Well, I think the Giants are competitive this year. I think they've been making the most of their situation with Daniel Jones. And I think Brian Daboll is probably one of the better offensive play callers in the league. He's just kind of been limited by his quarterback. But to pull that all together, I think Tyrone Tracy is in for a big day. He played the Seahawks last week, who are better against the run than the Bengals are. And yeah, he gets Cincinnati this week. The Bengals aren't great at stopping the run. He's coming off of a career best game in which he ran 18 times, 129 yards. He had a big day for fantasy. And with Devin Singletary being ruled out this week, the starting running back for the Giants, I think Tyrone Tracy might go ahead and eat. He averaged about 7.1 yards per carry last week. Even if that number drops in half, 3.5 yards per carry, 4 yards per carry is still pretty healthy. And I think he sees north of maybe 12-13 attempts. So do the math on that. Let's try to project for regression. So let's say he doesn't average 7 yards per carry like he did against the Seahawks. And let's say against the Bengals this week, he averages 4.5, right? So he regresses about 40%. And let's say instead of getting 18 carries, he gets 12 or 13, right? Maybe it's a blowout. Maybe they got to throw the ball up more. Let's go ahead and try to project in regression. Tyrone Tracy, if he averaged 4 yards a carry on, let's say, 13 carries, that's still going to be north of about 50 yards on the ground. He's probably going to be the punch-in option when it comes to goal line touches. So, hey, maybe he gets into the end zone. He's probably good for a healthy 11, 12 points this week, which is a really great flex fill-in. He's a solid RB2 fill-in, and I think he's a pretty strong spot start for you if you are in trouble, if you have a running back on bye, or maybe you have a guy on IR. All right, and the next spot start is another running back, and he plays for the Baltimore Ravens. It's not Derrick Henry. It's actually going to be Justice Hill. The reason I'm going with Justice Hill this week is the Ravens play the Washington Commanders. The Commanders have maybe one of the better offenses in the NFL. They don't punt the ball often. They typically find a way to put points up on the board. And this could be a game in which the Ravens have to air the ball out just to keep up. The Commanders have a really weak run defense. The Commanders rank 22nd in the NFL in run defense. They allow about 198 rushing yards per game. Keep in mind that does include rushing yards from quarterbacks. That includes rushing yards from multiple running backs. But the Commanders don't have the strongest run defense. Their D-line isn't what it needs to be, especially after trading Montez Sweat last year. The Ravens typically have a pretty strong rushing attack. They will get you 100 yards on the ground every game. I think Derrick Henry and Lamar could have a good game this week, but I do think this is going to be a high-scoring affair. Justice Hill has been relatively involved in the offense this year. When you look at his numbers over the course of 5 games, he has about 20 targets on the season. So he's averaging about 4 targets a game. He has 17 catches. So, you know, once again, it's about 3 to 4 catches per game. In a matchup in which I think the Ravens are going to have to toss the ball up to keep up with the Commanders and their high-powered offense, I think Justice Hill as the receiving back is likely to get some work. Hill has been pretty effective as a pass catching back. Once again, he has 17 receptions for 169 yards and a touchdown this year. The Commanders this season have also struggled against running backs who catch passes. And bringing it back to Vegas, I mean, the game is expected to be a high scoring affair. I want to say the over under right now is 51.5 points. So, you know, they expect a lot of numbers to be put up this week. Hill is somebody who's probably going to catch a couple passes out of the backfield if the Ravens get down for any reason. Let's say the Commanders are on the verge of an upset. Justice Hill will get more reps. He'll probably be a little bit of a vulture for Derrick Henry. And he's probably the preferred option in the game in the case that, you know, hey, the Commanders high scoring offense keep scoring points and the Ravens have to play catch up. I like Justice Hill this week. All right, and we'll keep the trend going with my final running back sleeper for this week, but that's going to be Bucky Irving, running back for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He plays the New Orleans Saints, and we have a really interesting matchup because the Saints are not healthy. Sounds like Derek Carr is going to obviously miss this game. Spencer Rattler is going to be the starting quarterback for the Saints. In the case that this ends up being a blowout, in the case that, let's say, the Buccaneers just go ahead and, you know, shut this game down early, Bucky Irving is going to get a lot of opportunity to run the ball on the ground. I'm looking at sleeper, and it looks like Bucky's only owned in about 71% of leagues. So, you know, in about a third of y'all leagues, he's available on the waiver wire. Go pick him up. Go stash him. Rashad White is doubtful. And just some numbers on Bucky Irving so far this year. He's averaging over 5 yards carry. He obviously is only getting around 8 to 10 touches per game throughout the season, playing, you know, tag along with Rashad White. But with Rashad White out of the game and, you know, being listed as doubtful, Bucky Irvin's workload is likely to increase. Rashad White gets about 10 to 11 touches per game. A lot of those touches are going to go to Bucky. And so if Bucky's averaging 8 to 9 touches as it is, and let's say Bucky inherits 50% of what Rashad White, you know, typically, you know, utilizes or earns. 50% of 10 is 5. Bucky averages about 9 touches a game. I would project Bucky to see probably around 14, 15 touches this game. Maybe more if it is a blowout against the backup quarterback and Spencer Rattler and the New Orleans Saints. The Saints' rushing defense is 23rd in the league against the run. They average 124 rushing yards given up per game. The Bucs, however, Rashad White's just not good. He's not very good, and their running numbers this year have struggled. Their rush success rate is 32%, so how successful are they, you know, at running the ball? Their number's 32%, which is one of the lowest in the league, and the offensive line is somewhat to blame. I guess you can say they've been underperforming. In a game in which I have the Buccaneers, listen, I like Spencer Rattler. I think he's accurate, and I think he can distribute a strong ball. I think he can throw the ball down the field. I think he's a little bit more confident than Derek Carr. And I do expect the Saints to actually kind of put up somewhat of a fight. But Vegas has the Buccaneers favored by a decent amount. And even beyond that, dude, Bucky Irvin's just explosive. He's averaging over 5 yards a carry, which is hard to do. In the case dude gets 15 carries, you're talking about him touching 60-plus yards on the ground. That's not even including what he could catch, you know, from Baker Mayfield in receptions. I got Bucky Irvin as a pretty strong spot start if you need him to be. If he's available, please go pick him up. At worst, just stash him on your bench. I got Bucky Irvin projected for probably around 12 to 15 points this week. I think he does about 60 yards on the ground. I do think he gets into the end zone. And I believe he has a couple catches as well, which boosts his numbers. In a half PPR league, I think 15 points is pretty fair. 6 points for the tutty. 6 points for, let's say, 60 yards on the ground. And let's say he has 2 to 3 catches for 20, 30 yards. About 15-ish points for you this week. All right, and my favorite wide receiver sleeper for this week is actually a guy in New England. This is going to be a slot receiver that maybe hasn't been talked about the most this year. But we're going to talk about DeMario Douglas, the slot receiver for the Patriots. You might know him as Pop Douglas. It sounds like Drake May is going to be the starter for the New England Patriots this week, which is going to be a change up from Jacoby Brissett. Now, Drake May, I studied him a little bit in college. We went through his profile. If you guys listened to some of the summer episodes where we broke down rookies, Drake May does have a tendency to target slot receivers, something that he did a lot, you know, in college. And funny enough, DeMario Douglas is the Patriots' slot receiver. DeMario Douglas has also probably been the most consistent receiver in the Patriots' wide receiver room with targets. DeMario Douglas has 24 targets and 18 catches on the season with Jacoby Brissett. We all know Jacoby's typically a more conservative, you know, close to the chest type of quarterback. Pop Douglas is nice because he's a slot receiver. He's close to the line of scrimmage. It's an easy dump off. He's like a faster alternative to like a Hunter Henry who plays tight end. I think Drake May coming into his first game in the NFL, I think Jerod Mayo is going to make sure that Pop Douglas gets his targets, gets his opportunities with him being the slot receiver, with him being the guy who Drake May can look at. The Texans do have a strong pass defense. So I think Drake May is going to have to rely on just quick, accurate passes, which plays to, you know, DeMario Douglas and the slot. So Douglas is leading the room in targets. He's averaging about 7 targets a game over the last 3 weeks. I think his role in the slot is going to align really well with a rookie quarterback playing his first game. He's going to work close to the line of scrimmage, so those will be easy dump offs, helping his target numbers. And, you know, once again, while the Texans do have a strong pass defense and they do have a really good pressure rate, the Texans' defensive line tends to get home. That's just going to even further benefit Pop Douglas and Drake May just releasing quick, short passes. Drake May might hit a couple over the top if, you know, he's able to stretch the field with like a Jalen Polk, maybe KJ Osborne. But just for like a spot start for someone who I feel most confident in, I know DeMario Douglas is going to get his targets. I know he's going to get his volume. I know he's going to touch the ball. He's the room leader in targets. He's available in probably about 70 to 80% of leagues right now, just because the Patriots defense or Patriots offense has been so bad. But, you know, with the Texans having a strong pass defense and having a really strong pressure rate, their defensive line gets home. Drake May is going to have to release the ball quick, early, and often, and DeMario Douglas is going to be the closest receiver outside of maybe Hunter Henry. So if you just want a really safe spot start, I like Pop Douglas this week. I think that he continues to see the targets. Once again, Jacoby was a little conservative. Drake May might be a little bit more aggressive. So there is a world in which maybe he regresses from 7-8 targets to maybe 5-6. He has a really high catch rate. He typically, you know, does well with the ball. He's averaging about 8 yards per catch. So, hey, if Drake May can step in and maybe push that number up a little bit because he throws it a little bit deeper, creates passes, he's more mobile. So, you know, maybe Pop Douglas gets time to scramble and make a big play happen. I think he'll do well in your lineups for you. I got Pop Douglas projected for about maybe 5-6 catches. I think that yards per catch number goes from 8 to 10, and I got him in for maybe about 50 to 60 yards, about 5 catches, maybe 20-30% chance at a touchdown. If you want to put those numbers together, you know, hey, 55 yards, just to call it in the middle, is 5.5 yards in fantasy, 5 catches and a half PPR is an extra 2.5, so now you go from 5.5 to 8 points total. And let's say there's a 20% chance he gets a touchdown, well, you know, 20% of 6 is like 1.2, 1.3, something like that. So the dude might be solid for, you know, about 10 points. If you need a low-end, safe flex play that has maybe some upside in the case that he does see a lot of targets, I like DeMario Douglas for you guys this week. Another one of my favorite starts for this week, if you are in a position of need, maybe you got a wide receiver on waiver or you got a wide receiver on bye, you need to pick someone up from waivers. Jalen Tolbert is available in 51% of your fantasy leagues, and he has a prime matchup this week. He gets Kirby Joseph on the Detroit Lions. Kirby Joseph is the cornerback 2 for the Lions, and Kirby has struggled against, you know, deep passes. Jalen Tolbert is a field stretcher. Jalen Tolbert averages about 15 yards per catch. This is a game in which a lot of people are projecting the Cowboys and the Lions to put up a bunch of points. The Detroit Lions defense has struggled against sacks, meaning they do not get home, meaning they do not generate enough pressure on the quarterback, which means that those receivers who run deep routes are going to have more ability to run deep and to catch those passes if Dak Prescott is, you know, comfortable in the pocket and he has time to let those routes build up. The Lions DB2 and Kirby Joseph has averaged about 8.2 yards per target. That's pretty bad. That's not good. It's towards the lower end for yards allowed by cornerbacks. And it kind of does suggest that deep routes are effective against Kirby Joseph, who's a wide receiver too this week. It's, you know, likely to be Jalen Tolbert. Jalen Tolbert is extremely effective on deep routes. He had a game-winning touchdown last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers on 7 catches, I believe. So he's starting to become an important part of the Cowboys' offense. Tolbert, once again, is averaging 15.3 yards per reception. He's likely going to be matched up with Kirby Joseph at multiple times throughout the game. So, hey, he's likely to exploit that matchup and come up with at least a couple of bombs. Right now, the Lions are favored by about 3.5 points. We talked about what 3.5 means in betting lines for Vegas. So Vegas believes the Lions are, you know, likely going to win against the Cowboys. But this is an over-under of about 52.5 points, which is one of the higher over-unders of the week. With the Lions just not being able to generate pass rush the way they might like to, with the Lions being susceptible against deep passes, and with Jalen Tolbert being a deep threat option who just had a crazy game with the Cowboys last week against the Steelers, who just had a walk-off touchdown to beat the Steelers, and who's starting to become a preferred option for Dak Prescott, who had words with CeeDee Lamb last week, I think Jalen Tolbert could go out and have a pretty good game for you guys. I like him a lot. He's available in 50% of leagues, and he should not be. He's starting to kind of come into his own. I want to say this is year 3 for Jalen Tolbert. This is either he's 25, so yeah, this is year 3 for Jalen Tolbert. And third-year breakouts is something that isn't foreign to a lot of us. Nico Collins was a guy who had a third-year breakout last year. Jalen Tolbert so far this year is having a really good year. He has 20 catches this year in five games. He has 247 yards in five games, and he has two touchdowns in five games. Tolbert's doing really well. His yards per catch is relatively high. He plays a defense that can't generate pressure. They're going to allow those routes to build up. Dak Prescott is great at throwing deep passes. And if the Lions decide that they want to stop CeeDee Lamb and make the Cowboys win a different way, shit, Jalen Tolbert. This next sleeper goes directly against what I said earlier in my analysis for Bucky Irving. But fuck it. I like Spencer Rattler. I think Spencer Rattler is a really good quarterback, and I think that he's going to have success. Spencer Rattler is probably my favorite dynasty stash this year. I watched him in preseason, and in preseason he cooked. He seemed confident. He threw pretty accurate, you know, passes to the receivers, and the whole time he's working with the second string, third string offense. He comes into a game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I know earlier in the episode I said that, hey, I like Bucky Irving. If this game goes south and the Buccaneers end up blowing out the Saints, Bucky's going to get work. But even in the case that it's competitive, Bucky will still get work because he's one of those backs that's versatile and he can run it or catch it. Well, Spencer Rattler is someone that in Dynasty I think you need to absolutely stash. In redraft this week, it might be a week too early, but fuck it. If you're desperate, why not? I like Spencer Rattler this week. Derek Carr went down with an oblique injury, and he's going to likely miss multiple weeks. Rattler was a fifth-round guy, picked up by the Saints. He has a bunch of weapons on that team, and Alvin Kamara, Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed. I think this is his job to potentially take. Derek Carr's cool, and he's been doing well in the Clint Kubiak offense. But once again, man, I think the energy is going to be different with Rattler in there. Chris Olave is someone who maybe has been a bit underwhelming this season. And if you do get someone like Rattler who has come out and on a microphone, he said that he wants to get Chris Olave involved in the game more. I trust him, and I think he gets Chris Olave involved in the game more, which can only help the offense. I love him as a stash, whether it's redraft or dynasty, and I think you'd be an idiot not to pick him up. He's mobile, right? He's able to go ahead and move around in the pocket better than Derek Carr can. Spencer Rattler has a pretty strong arm, which makes him, you know, able to complete passes at all three levels of the field. He can push the ball downfield, which stretches the defense, creates space underneath for guys like Foster Moreau, Juwan Johnson, and Alvin Kamara to eat. It's going to be great for Rashid Shaheed. And even in preseason, I mean, I think Rattler completed 20 of 38 pass attempts, which isn't a great percentage. But if you just were looking at the eye test, if you incorporate drops by second and third string receivers, he looked pretty strong. And even in college, I mean, he completed, I think, 68.5% of his passes. So he's someone who's played 5 years in college. He understands football. He understands coverages. The guys who play 4 or 5 years in college typically have a lot of success in the NFL. Look at someone like a Brock Purdy who came in and had immediate success. Spencer Rattler is more of the same. Coming from Oklahoma and all these different schools, I think just he has a lot of upside. And if you're someone who's struggling to get a quarterback for whatever the reason may be, pick him up. It doesn't hurt you much. It won't cost you anything. And if you pick him up before tomorrow at noon, I think you'll have a valuable piece that you've added to your roster. All right, and now we're going to go ahead and talk about some droppable players, guys, who, okay, let me rephrase that. Maybe not droppable. You might want to consider getting them the fuck off of your team, though. I'm going to go ahead and talk about a couple guys, some big names here that I believe have been just inconsistent throughout this year. They have an opportunity this week to kind of showcase what they can do, and if they do not deliver, I am mad at you if you trade them away. First guy that comes to mind, Tank Dell. Tank Dell has an opportunity this week without Nico Collins, who was just sent to IR, to step up, become a role player, or I guess maybe even a star within the offense this year, similar to what he did last. Dell just has not been consistent this year with performance. He has been dropping a lot of passes, something that I've noticed just from watching more Texans games. He'll get open, he'll have to make a sideline grab. Any type of target that's like an above average catch in terms of difficulty, he will kind of somewhat struggle to bring down. It feels like the only time he catches shit is when the ball hits him right in the numbers and he's like 2, 3, 4, 5 yards away from the closest defender. Tank Dell has dealt with, you know, small injuries throughout the season. With Stephon Diggs obviously probably being 1A in the offense, Tank Dell is likely to step up and still contribute, likely to get more targets without Nico Collins being there. My main point of concern for Tank Dell is that he's just in a sophomore slump. He is struggling once again with his catch rate. It's not very good. When you look at his performance throughout the first five games of the 2024 season, he has 21 targets, 13 catches. So he's catching about 65% of his passes, which actually isn't as bad of a number as I projected it to be. But throughout the season, he is averaging about 10 yards per carry, or 10 yards per catch. Last year, he was averaging 15 yards per catch. He had 7 touchdowns total in 2023. Through the first 5 games of 2023, he had 2 touchdowns. Right now, he has 0. I'm really hoping he can step up. Up until this point, he is the wide receiver 72 in fantasy football. And if he can't get it together this week against a vulnerable New England defense, keep in mind Christian Gonzalez is likely the best cornerback that New England has on defense. And I project Christian Gonzalez is going to shadow or work over top of Stephon Diggs. Yo, if Tank Dell can't exploit this week's matchup, I don't feel great about it. Next week, he does get the Packers, who are starting to return to form in their defensive cornerback room. Jair Alexander, Valentine, and all those guys are starting to get healthier. Yeah, it's going to be tough to, I guess, just support keeping him on the roster if he has another bad week, right? Tank Dell is someone who has to deliver this week, or else I'm considering trading or maybe even just dropping him off my roster. All right, and my next drop candidate is actually going to be another wide receiver, and this one's another big name, Jalen Waddle, wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins are in a really interesting spot. They are 2-3. Tua Tagovailoa has been suffering with the concussion issues, and we don't really know when he's going to be back. The first week that he is eligible is going to be week 8. This week, which is week 6, the Dolphins are on bye, so you're not starting Jalen Waddle even if you have him on your roster. But if you take a deeper look into Jalen Waddle's performance over the past couple of years, even with Tua, or, you know, without Tua, it's kind of been spotty. It's been really hit or miss. I'm going to dive into some metrics, and I'm going to kind of explain how I do certain calculations for guys, primarily during the offseason, but we can utilize it for this example. I'm going to talk about things like standard deviation. I'm going to talk about another term called coefficient of variation, COV. And I'm going to explain why it matters and why it helps me, or I guess how it helps me in fantasy football. Let's start with standard deviation. What does it mean? Standard deviation measures how spread out someone's numbers are. So for fantasy football, it's basically like asking, how much does a player's score vary week to week? How consistent are they? A high standard deviation means a player's performance is kind of sporadic. There's big highs and low lows. A lower standard deviation means that motherfucker's consistent. When it comes to Jalen Waddle, he is relatively inconsistent. In this case, he has a high standard deviation. There's another term, coefficient of variation. I know these words sound crazy. It sounds like a fucking math class, but I'm going to explain why COV matters. Let's call it COV. COV takes the standard deviation, so it, you know, takes the general consistency, and it divides it by the player's, you know, average score. It's another way just to see how reliable someone is. Think of it like a consistency rating. A low COV means they're consistent, A high COV means they're unpredictable. A low standard deviation means they're consistent. A high standard deviation means they're inconsistent. Low numbers are good. High numbers are bad. Jalen Waddle's coefficient variation is about 28%. That's relatively moderate inconsistency. He's somewhat consistent, but he still has, you know, some ups and downs. With Tua's health and with Waddle's own, you know, performance fluctuations, he's someone who I never really trust in fantasy football. In many leagues, he's being drafted in like the third round, fourth round, when it comes to, you know, draft season. I was never a big Jalen Waddle fan because ever since Tyreek Hill got to town, he's boom or bust, right? He's essentially boom or bust. So you take into the fact that Tua is not going to be available until about week eight. You take into the fact that Tyreek Hill is a target monster even when Tua is available. And right now they're projecting week eight. Tua's visiting a specialist this week during the bye week. And there's no promise he's going to be back in week eight. It's actually less likely that he's back in week eight. This is an extremely serious injury. Tua's had multiple concussions the last few years. He's not going to come back off of IR immediately, in my opinion. I think the Dolphins are going to play this as safe as possible just to remove any liability. Jalen Waddle's someone who, like Tyreek Hill, you hold on to because he's Tyreek Hill. You spent first round draft capital to get him. So you kind of have to hold on to him. But if it's not a running back for the Dolphins, I really don't want no piece of it. If I can move Jalen Waddle to someone who might buy him because of name value, I'd do it. If I can move Jalen Waddle for someone who's maybe a little bit more consistent, should I do it? This is a tough year for tight ends, and I think that Jalen Waddle, you can maybe move for a pretty solid tight end. And yes, I understand tight ends don't score as many points as wide receivers, but if you have a top six, top seven, top eight tight end, that's a big difference in terms of how many points you're scoring compared to the league average. If I could move Jalen Waddle off my team and maybe in exchange I get someone who can put up double digits at the tight end position or close to it, you know, so maybe I trade him for like a Pat Freiermuth. Maybe I trade him for like a Jake Ferguson. Maybe I even trade him for a Kyle Pitts or a Dalton Kincaid. I don't hate those trade options, and I think that you'll get more ROI from that. Once again, I understand he's a receiver, and I understand tight ends are tight ends, and they don't score that many points. But if you want to bring it back to mathematics and calculations, there's not going to be much of a drop-off at wide receiver from Jalen Waddle to whatever waiver wire wide receiver you find. Shit, you might even actually come up on some points if you finally get the balls to take him out of your lineup and put someone there who is a little bit more worthy. You're talking about selling wide receiver 52 on the season for a starting top 10 tight end and maybe replacing him with someone who has a lot more upside. Sorry for all the math calculations. I just tried to give some insight into, you know, how I break shit down when I do my own internal graphing and metrics throughout the offseason. I tried to apply it to Jalen Waddle in this situation, but I say all this to say Waddle, even with Tua Tagovailoa, is inconsistent. He's kind of boom or bust, and without Tua and with no promise of Tua returning anytime soon, he's not someone I really want to keep in my lineup. You probably drafted him with third, fourth, fifth round draft capital. I think the earlier you trade someone who's a bust, the better, simply because, hey, there might be someone out there who's desperate. There might be someone out there who buys off of name value. There might be someone out there who's optimistic about Tua's return. And maybe they'll give you a solid piece that can actually help your lineup. And you'll free yourself of having to start this guy who's getting you 5, 6, 7 points a game. And maybe you can start plugging in guys like Pop Douglas. Maybe you can start plugging in guys like, you know, like Darius Slayton. Someone who can actually provide you real upside. Maybe doesn't have the name value. And then your team gets better because you've improved at tight end. Maybe you improve at quarterback. And you also throw a guy in there who is maybe a better performer, just doesn't have the same name value as a Jalen Waddle. And my next drop candidate is going to be a Green Bay Packer, unfortunately. The next drop candidate I'm going to discuss is going to be Romeo Doubs, wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers. Romeo was recently suspended by the Packers. He missed practice. Don't know the full story, but he was suspended by the team and did not play in week 5, a game in which the Packers beat the Los Angeles Rams 24-19. Dobbs is a really interesting receiver because last year he was pretty solid. He played in all 17 games for the Green Bay Packers last season, and he finished the year as wide receiver 36. Last year, however, was also the emergence of Jaden Reed, second round wide receiver who was in his rookie season. Jaden Reed has ran away with the job as the wide receiver 1 for the Green Bay Packers. Christian Watson last season was also hurt. Christian Watson this season is going to be playing this week, and he's likely to be healthier this season than he was last. Less targets for Dobbs. Tucker Kraft has emerged as a top tight end for fantasy and maybe even in the NFL. You're talking about 3 different receivers who are better than they were last year and are showing it to you. Tucker Kraft, Jaden Reed, and Christian Watson are available, they're healthy, and they're here to perform. On top of that, the Packers added Josh Jacobs. They paid him a lot of money as a free agent to come into the backfield and take a lot of carries. So Romeo Dobbs in 2023 ended the year as wide receiver 36, playing in all 17 games. You've now added a certified wide receiver 1 in Jaden Reed, who's going to attract more targets. You have Christian Watson healthy this year, unlike last year. Tucker Kraft is more involved this year than last year. And you have a free agent running back getting a lot of money and who's also getting a lot of volume. Dontavian Wicks is also on the verge of breaking out. And the reason this is all relevant is Romeo Dobbs was a wide receiver 3 for you last year, and his competition is up all around the board. Romeo Dobbs is a cool receiver. He's not an all-world receiver, but he's good in his role, right? And getting good out of a receiver that you took in the 5th, 6th round, 4th round, wherever they took him on day 3, late day 2, I forget where they drafted him. But getting good out of a guy like Romeo Dobbs, who you didn't spend a whole lot of draft capital on, that's great. But don't get that confused with being an elite receiver, right? Romeo Dobbs this year has about 10% of the team's targets. Now, granted, some of those games were played with Malik Willis at quarterback. We know it's going to be a little bit different with Jordan Love. But Dobbs was a wide receiver 3 that you were happy to get at wide receiver 3 because last year in 2023, you took him with a much lower ADP than where you took him this year. You got Dobbs last year in maybe like the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th round. This year you paid up a prettier penny for him. And you have guys like Tucker Kraft, Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, and Josh Jacobs here on the offense, and they're all getting more work than what we're used to. Dobbs is maybe not a, listen, man, I don't want to say drop because he has talent and he's going to be useful and someone's going to recognize his name. Maybe they had him last year. Maybe they're Packer fans and they're going to go ahead and take Dobbs off your hands. Dobbs is not someone I'm banking on to save my team. Dobbs is not someone I'm banking on to go ahead and start in my lineup every week. Get rid of him early, in my opinion. The Packers are going to win a multitude of different ways. I'm not saying Dobbs won't have a couple good games here and there. But just common sense tells you that, hey, dude, there's 3 receivers in this offense that are way more involved this year. They brought in an all-world running back. You know, the dude is obviously unhappy. He's already been suspended. He's not fucking with the coach like that. Nothing about this situation paints positivity, nor does it paint progression. Everything about the situation is bad. And honestly, man, in week 6, going into week 7 soon, let me go ahead and just get what I can get for him, and let me not deal with this headache. The middle of the season for fantasy football is so vital and so important to a playoff push, mostly because this is the time in which you need to go ahead and make those key free agent pickups. You do not want to have roster cloggers on your team at this point of the season. And this is where you have to kind of make your trades. The middle of the season is probably the most popular time to see trades happen in your respective leagues. This is the time in which you have guys that have name value that might be living off of their production from last year that you can still sell for a value. You've been watching them closely. You've watched every snap of every game because they're on your team and you want to make sure they do well. And you realize, as much as maybe I do, that, hey, Dobbs this year, it just don't feel right. Get rid of the dude early. Get rid of the dude while he still has name value. People are still expecting him to maybe do something. Dobbs doesn't have a game this year where he has more than 8 points in half PPR. His best game, he had 7 targets with 4 receptions, 50 yards. He doesn't have a touchdown in any of the 4 games he played. And his best performance this year was as wide receiver 35. In the other 3 games he played in, he was wide receiver 50, wide receiver 92, and wide receiver 57. That's pretty bad. And truthfully, if you're hoping for him to be a top 10, top 20, shit, even top 25 receiver, you're hoping for a lot. You're hoping for over 50% progression from him statistically over the course of the rest of the year. That's not likely. That's a very, that's a large stretch. You need him to be twice as good as he's been in the earlier part of the season. Even if there is progression, typical progression is somewhere between 15 to 20%. So if he's wide receiver 75, hey, maybe he gets to wide receiver 60. That would be a 20% progression. Maybe he gets to wide receiver 50, right? Like, that would be closer to like a 33% progression. A 50% progression from Romeo Doubs would put him around wide receiver 36, wide receiver 37. A 50% progression is also unlikely. That's a very, very, very strong, once again, I say the word progression, compared to where he's performed. You typically don't see that. He kind of is what he is. His peak is likely a back end wide receiver 3, maybe a solid wide receiver 4 for you. Go out there and trade him, package him up in a trade, and maybe go get somebody who can actually benefit your team. Someone who might actually be able to go ahead and get you some points. I don't hate you. I wouldn't hate you if you traded Romeo Doubs for Jonathan Brooks. Or maybe you package Romeo Doubs up for Jonathan Brooks, someone who I think could steal that running back job in Carolina within the next month. All right, and running back wise, Travis Etienne probably needs to be called up to the front of the stage. He has not performed well at all this year. Tank Bigsby has seemingly just outperformed him this season. Looking at Travis Etienne's like advanced metrics this season, he's averaging about 9 fantasy points a game, which isn't great. The Jaguars offense has struggled in general. Rushing yards per attempt, so YPA, for Travis Etienne has dropped to about 3.8 yards per attempt. It was at 4.3 last season, which kind of indicates that maybe the O-line isn't getting the job done. Maybe he's not finding the holes, but regardless, he has been less efficient from running the ball. Receiving yards wise, I mean, his average reception, per target is about 5 yards, which is pretty limited, not great. Right now, he's averaging 9 fantasy points a game. Typically, Travis Etienne, historically, but the middle of the season is when he eats. The middle of the season for Travis Etienne is when he starts to pick up the slack. And if you look at the last 2 seasons, you know, middle of the season is kind of when he kind of gets going. Going from week 6 until about week 11, historically, in 2023, Etienne averaged 15.2 fantasy points per game during that period. In 2022, Etienne averaged around 12.8 fantasy points per game during that period. That is up about 20 to 30% compared to where he performed at the beginning of the season for each of those seasons. Typical for Etienne is that he struggles at the beginning of the year. He gets into his groove middle of the season. End of the season, he kind of dies out. But the middle of the season is when he puts up his points. I'm not telling you to trade Etienne this week. I'm not even telling you to drop him. I would actually advise that you do not drop him. But he's someone that if he just continues to follow the pattern that he set for himself, he's going to have a couple good games coming up soon. And that may be a time in which you trade him for max value. You drafted him as an RB1, likely in the 2nd round. He hasn't performed up to par. But if he has one big breakout game, shit, if he has two big breakout games, you can move off of him and get someone who's valuable. You can move off of Travis Etienne and get someone who's, you know, maybe top 20 at their position. So you might be able to move off of Travis Etienne for like a DJ Moore. You might be able to move off of a Travis Etienne for a Breece Hall, who's currently RB18, right? Shit, if you need a quarterback, you might be able to go ahead and get a top five, top seven quarterback for him. So maybe you can get a Jaden Daniels. Maybe you can get a Joe Burrow or someone like that. Travis Etienne picks things up middle of the season. We're getting to the middle of the season. In the case that this holds true and he has a big game, maybe even a couple big games, by week 8, by week 9, I'm weighing my options and I'm seeing what I can get for him. He eats in the middle of the season, but the beginning and the end of the season is typically where he kind of dies off a little bit. We'll see what happens, but keep that in the back of your mind. Those are all of my sleepers and drop candidates for this week. I'm sorry that I didn't have as many tight end options for you guys. If you are looking for a tight end to maybe pick up this week, just a couple names that I want to throw out there for you. I like the Saints tight ends because they will have Spencer Rattler in there, a rookie quarterback. Tight ends play close to the line of scrimmage. Juwan Johnson might be someone that you look into. And as far as other tight ends, I don't hate if you maybe go after like a Austin Hooper. If Hunter Henry is available on your tight end or available on your waiver wire, Drake May, another rookie, going to throw the ball to the tight end. So those are guys who I'm looking at maybe picking up if you're in need. As far as quarterbacks go, it sounds like Anthony Richardson's going to start. If for any reason it's Joe Flacco, easy start for me is Joe Flacco if he ends up starting this week. And another guy that I do enjoy this week is going to be Andy Dalton against the Atlanta Falcons. Falcons are a weaker pass defense. They're divisional, so the coaching staff knows a lot about them. I think that'll serve Andy Dalton well. He didn't have the greatest game against the Chicago Bears last week. He went 18 for 28, no touchdowns, one interception, 136 yards through the air. But his prior two games against the Cincinnati Bengals and the Las Vegas Raiders, he got you about 25 completions, about 2 to 3 touchdowns, and averaged about 265 passing yards. The Bears were a tough matchup, but he's back to the easy matchup with the Falcons this week. The Bengals and Raiders are some of the worst in pass defense, and the Falcons are within their region. So I think Andy Dalton has a pretty solid game for you this week. I think maybe a couple touchdowns, north of 200 yards, and enough to go ahead and be maybe a solid spot start for you this week if you need someone to go out there and plug into your lineups. Until we meet again, my name is Ja. Thank you for listening to the episode. Make sure you go ahead and subscribe to the show. And until we meet again, peace.